When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to another podcast, and welcome to the best guests in the world, Bossy Love.
Oh my god.
Hi.
So John and Amanda.
What an intro.
I know. How are you?
We're really good.
Thank you for coming in, I really appreciate this. Slightly, I say this to everyone that does a podcast, but it's because I've just been picking people that are amazing, so I'm slightly overwhelmed once again. This has been an incredible year so far for you guys. I guess I've opened the podcast with one of your tracks, but I've asked you both to pick four songs each. John, you've gone for the most obscure songs in the world.
No, I swear to God, I haven't. No, no, I'm not having it. I haven't picked my last one yet. I'm going to go for like something really like whatever the like Bing Crosby, like, White Christmas.
We should probably just kind of give a brief that brief historical introduction as to how you guys met. And how Bossy Love came into fruition. So, tell us.
I was on tour with Dan and Anna Aykroyd, and we went to Dundee to support the Futureheads, and we got told that we were playing with this band, Operator Please. And we were like, oh, cool, they're from Australia, great. And then there were six of us, so wherever we went, everyone was terrified of us, like these six like loud, crazy Scottish people. But it was five of them, and they were all really loud and annoying as well. So I go into the dressing room, and I'm like, hi, we're sharing this room with you, or whatever.
It wasn't like that.
Don't do the impression. No, right.
Okay, fine.
Can you do the impression?
No, it's really, you make me sound like an old Indian woman.
Well, no, you were just like, this door bursts open, as a young John Bailey Jr. with his hood up, and he goes, hi, I'm John from Dan and Anna Aykroyd, and we're sharing this dressing room with you. And I was like, hi!
And 5 minutes later, I was sitting on Amanda's knee, and we were like best pals.
Yeah.
And I can't stress enough how tired I was constantly touring and how much I couldn't be arsed with anyone. And it was like, we need to be like best friends now, that's it.
Yeah.
And then we didn't see each other for like...
months.
Oh no, it wasn't that long.
No, it was a couple months, and then I had a show... yeah, at King Tut's.
Yeah.
And these guys got me so steaming before the show.
Oh my god.
And they made me like try and be Scottish between each song, and I was so drunk that my sound guy turned down my guitar because I was playing a semitone out. Like,
incidentally, we walked into Tut's and the band were walking on stage, and we just came into Tut's. And our tour manager like grabbed her and put a guitar on her and threw her on the stage. And she was like, okay.
It was such a good show though. The crowd were mental. I used to love coming to Scotland because the crowd was always mental.
And how many times had you been here before?
Like 4 or 5.
Yeah. So quite a lot.
The Barfly was like where we played.
Oh my god, I loved the Barfly. Yeah. I miss it so
like
much.
We did so many tours. We were on like the Enemy tour, then we did the Gonzo tour.
Oh yeah.
And then, like, Levi's Want to Watch tour. So we were, like, just those 3 times alone, we were always in Glasgow.
That's crazy.
But that's how we met.
And straight away, we were making music. Yeah. Actually, we just walked past the flat I used to live in, and we made, like, 2 songs that day.
Yeah.
Which still no one's heard. And then, so Amanda went back to Australia, and our album cycles... like we were never doing the same circuit at the same time, so she would come here and I would go hang out with her.
When they were on tour and stuff.
Yeah.
So. And I would go to Australia with the band and we would hang out there. So,
and so we used to send demos over. And so when Operator Please split up, everybody needed a break. And yeah, but so my band split up and then I had all these demos and I was like, okay. I was like, I'm going to do a solo project. Why not? But all these songs, I'll just do it. And I had like a bunch of names and then I came up with Bossy Love. It stuck. There's some other pseudonyms that I've recorded stuff under, but that was like for Ministry of Sound stuff. Like I have pseudonyms for that kind of stuff. But Bossy Love. And I was working with producers in Australia, bringing my stuff to them, and they were like, this is too weird, this is never going to work. Everybody was like, you can't do that. This is never going to work. It's too weird, you're mixing too many things together. And I was like, cool, all right.
And it's not like you were Mersbo or something.
I wasn't
white noise. Like, no. Do you know what I mean?
And I was like, okay, cool, all right. So I felt like I had done all I could do in Australia.
Yeah.
And so I was like, Dad's British, I have a passport, I'm just going to go.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and so I booked a flight, and I'm over this side now, and then eventually I sent him the songs. I was like, what do you make of these? And he was like, oh my God. And then
that's it.
He'd done, first one you did was Call Me Up.
Yeah.
And he sent it back to me, and I was like, holy shit. And that was it. I was like, yeah, I think this is supposed to happen.
Call me up, the song that's obviously open this podcast. So you've picked songs. Now, your first song, Amanda, it's Malibu by Hole.
Yeah, by Hole, yeah.
This is a really beautiful, melodic, upbeat track. That kind of influenced you? Or?
All right, so the first song that I ever learnt on guitar, which was the beginning of me starting to write for Operator Please, was Celebrity Skin by Hole, because it was number one in Australia at the time.
Written by Billy Corgan.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, it was number one, and it was always played, and we used to have guitars in the house all the time. My sister was musical, my dad was musical, but we just seemed to have guitars in the house and nobody really played them. And it was sitting in the corner and I was like, I thought to myself, what would it be like if I picked that up and I played it? Like, what would happen? Like, I looked at it, I was like, I bet you I can play that. And then, so I picked up a guitar. It was like out of tune, horrible, right? I was like, okay, go go on the, this was like the internet, the first computer dial-up, whatever. I was like, how do I learn guitar? And so I was like, tabs. Found tabs for Celebrity Skin. I was like, cool, I'll try that song. And then, so I just sat up on the computer learning how to play guitar on these tabs. And my dad was just like, what are you doing? And I'm like, playing. He was like, I know, you're playing guitar. What the hell? And so that's where I was introduced to Hole. And so, yeah, and then Malibu, for me, is, like, so kind of... It's the most bittersweet song ever because it's, like, beautiful, melodic, but it's, like, got so much depth of sadness in it.
Yeah.
And, like, at the end of the video where she throws... Like, she's in the ocean and stuff, it's, like... Water, for me, is always, like, cleansing and rebirth and stuff like that. And so, yeah, that song, to me, is always, like, melancholy and really bittersweet and... I don't know. It just makes you think of another time. Yeah. I don't know. You know, even when I was young, I felt a sense of connection to it because I was just like, do you know, I'd listen to it when it was like, when I was like sitting in the car, like when you got your headphones in, you're just watching stuff, do you know?
So that it was a great time in music. Is that? Yeah. John, you have picked one of the first obscure track, Cirrus Moe.
Yeah.
I have never heard of this artist, which I love on the podcast because it introduced me to something completely different.
This guy is like a graffiti artist from Berlin, and he's been releasing since like 2001. And his first track was called Mineville, and it was like on all the Ibiza compilations and everything. It's like this really interesting like disco house song. But he's like a recluse basically, and he doesn't it doesn't like meeting people or going out or releasing his stuff even. And so I've been obsessed with him since that point. And you know Mode Selector?
Yeah.
See their label, 50 Weapons? Yeah. They started it simply to put out Serismo. Like, they've said that in interviews. The whole reason that label exists is for this
guy.
Because he just doesn't... He just does his graffiti and his digital stuff and all that. So he has, like, maybe 100 tracks released now. He just... He's, like, an absolute machine. And all his stuff is, like... has this huge playfulness, but he's like some mad virtuoso with chords, so everything's really sort of sad, and none of it is particularly for the dance floor, but it gets DJ'd a lot.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And I was at Melt Festival and I met him, and I had
what?
Been, yeah,
oh,
I met him in the line for the toilets, and I fucking lost it, like, completely. Like, I lost my mind. Because no one knows what this guy looks like, so he's never been, like, wee guides before. Do you know what I mean? So I'm like, wait, and I'd been drinking Jägermeister all day, and I turn around, and I'm like, that's fucking sick. And I grab him, and I'm like, and he looks at me, he's like a recluse, he's like a shy wee guy. And I'm like shaking him, like, oh my god. And he doesn't speak any English. He only speaks German.
Oh no.
So I get out my iPhone, and I'm showing him that I've got everything he's ever made in my phone. And he's like, oh god, and I get my photo taken with him. And he looks like I'm a serial killer. And every time the guy puts something out, I'm like, he's like my hero.
Right.
Just like, he has everything covered. He's not overly... He's like an amazing producer who... It's not like he's trying or overanalyzing. It's just like really free.
So your next track?
Yeah.
Are we going for Lauryn Hill?
Yeah.
Okay, X-Factor.
X-Factor, okay.
So, Lauryn Hill,
Lauryn
Fugees.
Hill. Yeah, okay, so... Lauryn Hill and the Fugees was the first time that I realized that maybe I could sing in public.
Right.
I entered the talent quest when I was in eighth grade, when I looked like a little brown dumpling potato.
Oh,
and I
my
did
God.
My hair so tight that my sister used to call me Sumo because I was like... You know, but whatever.
What's a talent quest?
A talent quest at school, we had this thing called talent quest, and everybody enters and they do heats and then they do a final.
Oh.
Like,
so it's like a
school
talent.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So I was in eighth grade and I was like, I used to sing along to... So let's go back even further. I was living in New Zealand and there used to be this record store. And it used to have a bargain bin at the front with cassette tapes. This is cassette tapes. I was maybe seven years old. And I was digging through the cassette tapes and I was like, I found the Fugees record on cassette tape. And I didn't know anything about them, didn't know what it was. I just was like, that cover looks really great. I'm going to buy this. And it was $1. So I bought it and I listened to it every day for like the next year.
Surprise, see no one loves. explain myself.
I don't understand why.
As painful as this thing has been.
Yeah.
I just can't be with no one else. See, I know what we've got to do.
You let go.
And I let go too.
Obsessed with Fugees and Lauryn Hill, and so I had always had that. And then when she went solo and the Whoop That Thing came out,
record
for me was eighth grade. But then I was like, I wonder if I am brave enough to enter the talent quest. So I entered and I sang Killing Me Softly, right? And like this little kid on stage, like singing Lauryn Hill and like going for it, and this eighth grade, this is like with people in 12th grade, like, and I'm just, I'm going to give this a go in front of the entire school. I ended up coming second.
There you go. See if you had been on the internet, see if YouTube had been around then, you'd be viral now.
So, but like, I sang, there was a girl, I did a duet with my friend Sophie, and came second in it. And and that's kind of when I started singing in public.
Do you remember?
It was always Lauryn Hill, though. It was always every talent quest I would do Lauryn Hill. The next I did Everything Is Everything, and I learned the rap and everything.
Wow!
And like
so brave.
And then I was asked to do for theatre. I sang her Joyful Joyful part from Sister Act, and I had to wear like the nun outfit, and I came out by myself and sang that song. So Lauryn Hill is like a huge influence on me. Like, I don't have like an inch on her voice, but I think like that kind of the passion, and I think in terms of an artist that is like completely honest, she's as honest as you can get.
Yeah.
Like, that's the song I've picked is X Factor. And like, as I said about Courtney Love, like you can feel that the pain in it. but for her to be able to sing it and make it something so beautiful mm-hmm. that you're transported. Like, you can feel that sadness, but at the same time, it's that bittersweet thing where you're so, like, enveloped by how amazing and beautiful her voice is that mm-hmm. you get this, like, burning thing happening in your chest, like, in your heart and your stomach. And, yeah, so I think that's this song for me is, like, absolutely beautiful mm-hmm. and her voice is stunning, but it is like so much pain, but like
I'm gonna cry. Oh, I don't want to cry in the bloody podcast,
but do you know what I mean? Like,
no,
it's
I
that,
do. It's nice to hear when people are so passionate about an artist though,
but when you hear it you're like and even like the backing of it's beautiful. It's like got those kind of birds and it's like, it sounds like a summer morning.
Yeah.
Pretty much like someone's just opened their blinds and like standing at the window and just like singing. But yeah, you can feel that and hear that pain. But at the same time for her to make it into something so beautiful for someone else is like, you know, the most truthful thing ever.
Yeah.
It's also one of the songs that we totally bonded over the first time we were on it.
And we were watching Amy Winehouse videos and hearing her similarities in her voice to Lauryn Hill. Like, that's what I loved about Amy Winehouse's voice as well, is that you can hear that she loves Lauryn Hill. There's certain pronunciations where you're like, oh, Lauren. I mean, I'm not taking away from Amy Winehouse whatsoever, but
she's
like,
the best.
Yeah.
Back to you, John.
Oh, hi.
So, how do I pronounce this? Junin.
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 Yeah. See, this seems obscure, but it's not.
No, I just feel insignificant and quite stupid that I can't even pronounce the name. But so who are Junin?
So Junin.
Junin. See, fuck's sake.
Junin. So this Israeli composer called Shai Binzer. It's Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead.
I can pronounce that.
Yeah, we got that guy. And the Rajasthan Express, who are these 19 musicians from Jodhpur, which is like an Indian province or something. Yeah. And I heard about it because I'd read that Shai Binzer asked Johnny Greenwood to produce his record. And then, so Johnny got in Nigel Godrich to engineer it, as you do.
Yes.
And also, just, we're going to go record it in the fort in Jodhpur, which is, like, above the town on a rock, and it's, like, an ancient Indian fort. And Paul Thomas Anderson's going to come and make a documentary about us recording it. Rocket, 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 le Elohim. Rocket, 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 me Elohim. Rocket, 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 be Elohim. Rocket, 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 be Elohim. Svatay noshkot lekivrecha nafshi ola. Svatay noshkot lekivrecha nafshi ola. Svatay noshkot lekivrecha nafshi ola. Svatay noshkot lekivrecha nafshi ola, 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 me Elohim. Ola, 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 me Elohim. Ola, ola, ola.
Hey.
read this and like shot my load, obviously, right? That's like my absolute dream lineup, basically. And then I heard it, and it's so well pitched because it has all like Shai Binzer does stuff in Urdu, and he does like traditional Jewish stuff, and he's like total, just this really sort of rayon guy. And then you add Johnny Greenwood, who brings like old drum machines and synths and all this sort of thing, and then all these old Indian musicians who are like, but it's all the crazy like bright brass and tablas and all this sort of thing. And it doesn't sound like forced. It's uh-huh. like so. It seems like so jammed out and natural. I got to see them. We have the same manager now as Radiohead. This guy, Craig ATC.
Did you know that?
No.
Oh.
So who's your manager then?
Craig Newman.
Right.
And Jay.
So, yeah, and this girl Jay. So it's Craig and Jay, and Craig and Brian manage Radiohead. So they manage Junoon as well. Which is...
So how do you feel about that? Because I feel quite, physically sick with excitement
really?
For you. Yeah. Well, Radiohead are my favourite band.
They're one of my favourite bands as well.
So...
Yeah. It's really, 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 really cool. Really cool.
But you always said that because of what you guys had done individually, and you've been through that whole journey of... getting to that level of people knowing who you were, and a really successful level compared to a lot of people, it was always a matter of you guys taking your time until things were right for you. And I think, I don't know if this is right or not, but I feel for you it's more about you enjoying yourselves this time. Is that right?
Yeah,
in a lot
definitely.
Of ways, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that actually helps everything.
Uh-huh.
Because if like, we were getting approached for management for ages and ages, and we had, like, tens, and I'm not showing off, but, like, tens of managers, and we were, like, really overwhelmed, like, shit. And we started saying stuff like, okay, we don't send music to anyone.
Yeah, that
come,
was the first rule.
You need to come to Glasgow to be in the shortlist.
Yeah.
So, some came to Glasgow, not that many, funnily enough.
Yeah.
And then some came twice.
Yeah. And so Jay, who's like our day-to-day, she's like our manager, came from London, and we sat down in Pisano's eating pizza, and she knew everything about us.
She asked questions. She was keen.
And she is absolutely amazing. And it was like, straight in your chest, this is her.
I had met her previously in London. I went to the office and I sat down in the room and I was like, she gets it. And then I called John straight away and I was like, you need to meet her. I think this might be the one.
Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
That's the difference. But like, for all the other managers managed other people, and had it been us 10 years ago, you'd have been like, oh, that's really exciting. Let's go with them. And because we didn't, we're like, no, let's, like, we're not in any rush. And that's still our method. We're just like, we take our time and whatever feels right, that's what we do.
There's a heart cannot hide. There's a beat can't deny. When it sings, when it lies, when it cheats, when it cries, there's a war inside. Stone.
Okay, so Swedish music in general.
Do you get a wide on for it?
I get a wide on for it, but because of the knife.
Oh, yes.
You know? That's where it started.
Yeah.
I was like, the knife. I heard the knife. This is now. I should probably put that song on, but this is now is like one of my favorite knife songs. And lasagna. I think that's cute, that song. So I have been obsessed with the knife ever since I first heard them. So like I've heard everything they've done. I've got everything they've ever done, everything she's ever done, everything he's ever produced. So I learned that they had my favorite Robin song, which is Who's That Girl?
Yeah,
produced by the knife. And I was like, that's why it's my favorite. And then Licka Lee came out. So, story about this. I first saw her or found out about her when my last band played a TV show it was like a TV segment where you do two live songs. And I don't know what it was called, but it was in the Academy in London.
TFI Friday.
I don't know what it was, but so we were playing.
Let's just say
we were playing in one room, and it was kind of like a Jules Holland style setup where we'd go straight to the other person. So we were on this side, and Licka Lee were on that side, and there was this like beautiful, short, small girl with like long hair, and she was like dancing, and her first single that she had released. That she was playing, and I was like, oh my god, this is really cool, what is this? So I went and I did a bit of stalking on her. So I've liked her ever since then, and I've seen her like maybe two or three times since then. But she's also another one that makes these like dance floor heartbreak songs. But this particular song, Love Me Like I'm Not Made of Stone, there's a part in it which absolutely like shakes my core. Like this is like I think it's just her and a guitar, and I think it's live tracked for sure. Because there's a part in the song where her voice breaks and it's like she's crying. And like when that happens, it's like I want to cry and then I did reading up on this record, and it was like she had broken up with like someone she was so in love with, came back off tour and had no house, no boyfriend. You know, he left her and everything. And like this. And when I watched interviews of her playing these songs live, and she's so withdrawn and like answering questions by someone interviewing her, like she just did not want to be there, like she was broken.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear that throughout this record. It's like so sad. Like when I first put it on, it's different for her because her other songs, like they're quite full of like they're quite sexy, and there's still that kind of longing for love, that chasing down that love, and there's like a magical universe that she has in the first two records, and this third record is like bearing it all. It's a bit slower, but it's totally a collection of songs, and it brings you to a time for her, obviously. This song is like at the end, and it's one of the ones that's way less produced. It's just her singing with a guitar, and there's one line in the last chorus of it where her voice just, and it's like she's just started crying during the take. And yeah, fuck, it gets me.
You guys hadn't picked your songs till you came here, which frankly I find quite insulting.
I'm so sorry.
And you've changed them about 15 times so far, and I'm not exaggerating. So you've your next song, John, is The Dream, All I Need.
Let's go, leave everything and let's go to a place where no one else can know. Let's run,
drive. Make sure there's nothing in between us, both you and I. Let's fly up until the moment we die. Live in a mansion where there aren't any rules to be shy. All I need is you, baby. Ooh, ooh, oh. You're the only one I need. All I need is you, baby. Ooh, ooh, oh. You're the only one I need. All I need is you, baby. Ooh, ooh, oh. The only one I need. All I need is you, baby.
I need you, baby.
All I need is you, baby.
I need you, baby.
All I need is you, baby.
I need you, baby.
All I need is you, baby.
All I need you, baby.
All I need is you, baby.
All I need is you, baby.
You have that somehow.
Majestic confessions. The heart of the restless. When I look into your eyes, your flawless complexion just impacting my affection. Without you, I die.
Dream is this guy, Terrence Nash, who is a singer-songwriter.
Who's just written everyone's songs, basically. So, produced every major hit.
Yeah. He puts out an album every year by himself.
Right.
And he's like ghetto prince. Every song is about money or sex. Every single song. And he's so, like, intelligent with lyrics and... I think it operates above a lot of people's heads, and a lot of his lyrics can seem quite offensive or like backwards or something, but there's always more going on. He's just really, really clever. And he has this thing that I really like that we try and do is where coming from the culture, because he's from Atlanta, and he must be in his 40s now or something. He comes from the culture of like standing on street corners and things being throwaway, but smart, and that's the way he writes. So even when he writes songs, his lyrics are like funny. And then on top of that, he just happens to have written like all the big feminist pop anthems. He wrote All the Single Ladies. He wrote Flawless. He wrote Umbrella.
Yeah,
all of them.
And produced them.
Yeah, he's an absolute machine.
And, like, so much stuff for Ciara.
Yeah.
Who I think is, like, one of the most underrated pop stars.
Well, she's amazing.
I think a lot of people think that, though, to be
Yeah,
honest.
She's
she
just...
She is dynamite. Like,
yeah.
Have you seen live shit
yeah.
of her? It's like,
she's
what
amazing.
The fuck?
Yeah.
And, The Dream was one of the first people that me and Amanda... I didn't know anybody else who liked him or had heard of him.
I think I sent you... What record was it?
1979. 1976.
No,
whatever
no,
that
I
one
sent
is.
You the one before that. I sent you Yamaha.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was obsessed with that song. I was like, This is what I'm obsessed with.
And he's really worth looking into. His back catalogue is pretty overwhelming. But do you know when you have an artist who you're just in it with them and everything they put out, you're like, this is my favourite thing you've ever done? That's totally my guy.
Right.
This song is off his last release. And it's him at his most sort of heartbreaking Michael Jackson. So, do you know what I mean?
It's it's like power.
Yeah, and he lifts from Michael Jackson and he lifts from Prince and he doesn't really give a shit. He's just a total demon.
No, but he makes it into his
thing. Yeah. It's
and not... he can sing like fuck. We're forgetting this.
Yeah.
Like fuck.
But he's got songs where he'll really, like he'll sing about how he can make love to this girl and make her sing like Mariah, and then he'll do an impression of Mariah. And it sounds so stupid, but it's so good.
Yeah.
So, this is all I need, and it's from, I think it's called the Crown EP.
Okay.
And every track off it
and
is...
And he also wrote,
doing...
like, We Belong Together by Mariah and, like, Touch My Body and stuff.
Yeah.
Which was my favourite.
Yeah,
look him on Discogs, you'll just, your mind will be blown.
We play a game at home, because we're quite sad, called What Is That Person's Net Worth? And he was one of the first people that we put in.
Yeah, also, he loves to sing about how he owns
his
own
publishing. Yeah. Hell no, I ain't got more money than me.
It's I love the idea, though, that the whole like embarrassing rapper thing of I've got more money, his take on it is, no, seriously, I have got more money than you. Like, do you know what I mean?
My last song.
But it's a big song.
It's a
big
belter.
Tune. Big tune.
This one. All right, so we just went from The Dream.
Mm-hmm.
And coincidentally, The Dream wrote and produced this one. This is Ride by Sierra.
Sierra. Uh-huh.
Catch me in the mall. You know I buy it out. G5 plane. Yeah, fly it out. On the back, look like Lex sitting on 28. No, you can't get her if you ain't got plenty cake. ATL, Georgia. Booties look like this size. 23 waist, pretty face. Dick size.
I can do big.
Black and beats vibes, baby.
I can do it whenever or however you want. I can do it up and down. I can do circles. To him, I'm a gymnast. Is my circus. I market it so good. They can wait to try. I work it so good. Many's trying to buy. They know the way I'm riding. They know the way I'm riding. They know the way I'm riding. They know the way I ride the beat. How I ride. Get it, I'ma pitch it down a little, baby. Yeah, I do it to ride. So I'm good. Handle my business like a big girl should. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Baby, give me more. Pick me up, pick me up. You are my Ducati. All up on your frame. Baby, say my name. Show you how to get on. I market it so good.
Black and beats vibes, baby.
Soon as I get her to the top, she screams. I put her out like a light, she'll be out for the night. Soon as I hit her, hit the pillow, squeeze. Wake her up about 30 minutes later, call her me the Terminator. Let's go again. Red zone, I'ma get a first down. Call me Luda Drew Brees, I throw it in. Touchdown, he scores. Ludacris the MVP. With a rack like that and a back like that, CC better CC me. Cause them legs just keep on going. So I got up, put her to bed. Let the 808 thump and the beat go bump. Cause she riding like a thorough.
I ride it.
probably the best song to get down to on the dance floor. For me, this is the new Pony.
Oh yeah, right.
Is like horny women empowerment.
Incidentally, we tried to cover Pony for the BBC session and
they
wouldn't
let us.
That
it was
our
too risky.
But he's talking about riding a pony.
Yeah, Ollie even had a talk box as well.
We did it with a talk box, had the whole thing sorted out.
Oh my god,
and they were
I'm
like,
gutted.
And then we switched to Millionaire by Khalid.
Have you ever done it live?
No,
oh we really should,
god,
shouldn't we?
Do it live, please.
The crowd would be like, honey. Yeah, everybody honey. But yeah, so this is like, you know, we were talking about it just before. It's like, to John, you and I, this is like a staple kind of dance floor hit. You know, this is a real grinder. This is
when
a real rubber stumper.
When you put in your
stumper.
DJ set.
Totally.
Yeah, for sure.
But to some people, they don't even know what this is. But guaranteed, when we drop this at a DJ set, everybody gets ratchet. It's great. Yeah.
And
if you want people to get down and grind and get nasty, get down and dirty, they've had their drinks. Do you know what I mean? This is like when people are like at the drunkest. You drop this.
Do it now.
And you watch them just like, oh my God, what is this? Like...
And if we're playing a festival and we don't get a sound check and we go on and set up and we're testing the track and stuff.
Oh yeah, we drop this.
We play this and then we're
in a good mood.
Then we're in the midst to play,
you know?
It's one of those.
Yeah. It's a great song all around. It's like hook after hook. You know, Sierra is amazing. The video is unbelievable. It's even banned because it's too sexy.
The amount of material that you've written, have you got an album's worth, would you say, or more?
More.
Yeah. And are you just going to keep releasing things in your own time when you're happy?
Yeah.
I love the nonchalant attitude. It's amazing. It's just like, yeah. Get
to
fuck.
No,
it's not that. It's just like, because we don't, you know, there's not a, we're going to make an album and then this is happening and then we will make a second album, do you know? Yeah,
I don't think anything works like that anymore.
No, because people, it's really sad that they don't digest albums as much as they used to. And do you guys find yourself that you keep going back to old albums?
Yeah, because an album for me is like a journey. It's like that collection.
Yeah.
Do you know? And these songs that are totally pieced together so well. So it's like a whole, it's an experience of music rather than just like bits and pieces of song. I think it's a journey. You're taking a journey with that artist for a certain, like an hour.
Obviously your live show is kind of, I think it's fair to say what you guys are pretty much, that's put you on the map. And I think that's the most important thing. So is it something that you're looking to develop into something a bit bigger, or are you quite happy with the way that it's going just now?
It feels like we've only played in like three cities.
Yeah.
And a few festivals, so it would be good to sort of, you know, like find our groove with this setup and then let it go from there rather than do that. Because we'd spoke about before we'd even played a live show, we were like, oh, it'd be really fun, you know, if we done a festival and we could get so-and-so in to play this and so-and-so in to play this and we could bulk up the band randomly, which would still be really cool, but it'd be really nice to like really road test what we've got right now and just see what happens.
Cool. So your last song, John, is John Grant.
You are at the height of your game, aren't you? Would you not say that you agree, baby? You got your grip all fine-tuned and sparkling. Yeah, you got your board look all worked out. You are all enlightened, nothing makes you frightened. You ain't got no time to waste on entry-level middle class. You are super silly, yes, pretty and ridiculous. You got really good taste. You know how to cut and paste. What you got is a black belt in BS, but you can't hawk your pretty wares up in here anymore. Hit your head on the playground at recess. Let you sketch your way out of this one reject. You know how to get what you want, don't
A black belt in BS, but you can't hawk your pretty wares up in here anymore. Hit your head on the playground at recess, etch a sketch your way out of this one reject.
Pilgrim Ghosts, mm-hmm. that was on some, I think it was on like a Resident Advisor playlist on Apple Music or something. I just totally randomly came across it, and this is only like 6 months ago, and I was like, who produced this? What wizardry is going on here? And then I found out he was like in an Americana band, yeah. and now he lives in Iceland, and it's produced by the guy from Gus Gus, who are on Compact, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I just got totally obsessed with that album, and it's and John Grant in general. And then we played Glastonbury and went to see him, and he had the flu, and he came out and he sang like 4 songs, and I was like crying, like, this is unbelievable. And then his voice just disappeared.
Oh,
and he was like, I've got flu, but you know, we'll just see what happens, let's just go for it. And then when he couldn't reach the notes, the crowd were singing for him, and it was this like just amazing moment. And since then it's been like he's been like the staple of the long car journeys. Yeah. We just cycle through his records, and I like that every album, like I was kind of hoping that every album sounded like that, like this really raw sort of analog sound, but the one after that's like, it sounds like Nine Inch Nails or like Electro Clash or something. It's so weird. And the one before that is, he still has his little slow country songs,
yeah.
which I never thought I would like.
So I just want to talk briefly in terms of the recording and the production of the tracks. Is that all done in house, and that's by yourself?
Yeah.
And you can tell that really.
Yeah.
Like, is it something you do it for other people as well, don't you, John?
Yeah.
So who are some of the people that you've worked with?
I just did the new Babe album.
Yep.
I did a project called Sequel.
Yeah,
as well.
That's Tom.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Tom Nicol. I did that.
I loved that EP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. No, yeah, he has like 20 tracks sitting.
And he's a tour manager extraordinaire that looks like Paul McCartney.
unbelievably, like,
it's crazy.
I don't remember him looking like Paul
McCartney. He looks
McCartney.
So much like Paul McCartney.
Does he? Yeah. Oh wow, I didn't really look at his face then.
Who else? I do a lot of like remix,
yeah,
type stuff and like remedial stuff. But yeah, nothing else too exciting, to be honest.
You've got a series of gigs in October.
Yeah.
So you've got Glasgow, Edinburgh, and London.
Yeah.
And your Glasgow one's at the Poetry Club,
yeah,
which we have tickets for. Fucking all, we've got our tickets already. is that just because you wanted to do a mini kind of tour?
We just wanted. Yeah, we're just trying to sort of keep a grip on doing things on our terms as much as possible, and we're like, what's our favourite venue in Glasgow? And you know, you have people, you have some people, not people in our direct team or anything, but you have people who are like, oh, you guys should be doing like Stereo or this venue now, and you should be bulking out. And we're like,
no,
do I do that? So we're like, what's our favourite venue? And it's the Poetry Club.
Wow.
And London, we went around all the venues, and there's this little bizarre, it looks like a classroom with a bar attached to it called the Nines in Peckham, and it's amazing. We're like, this is where we want to do it.
So I wish you all the best
for the
rest of the year and beyond, and thank you so much for doing this.
You know she ain't got a patch. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.